You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. And we're talking about mycology this hour, the science of studying fungi. Paul Stamets is my guest. He is a mycologist, an expert in the cultivation and growth of mushrooms, author of The Mushroom Cultivator in Growing Gourmet and Medicinal Mushrooms, founder of the Fungi Perfecti, of Fungi Perfecti. It's a business promoting the growth of mushrooms and their use, both in the kitchen and in the environment. Once again, our number is 1-800-423-TALK. Paul, I need you to go back and tell me what it was that got you interested in studying mushrooms in the first place.
Well, my earliest memory was when I was 5 years old, and my mother told me that puffballs would cause my twin brother to become blind if spores got into his eyes. Well, I put that into good use and immediately pelted my twin brother with as many puffballs as I could find.
And he still sees fine, does he?
Actually, we both suffer from bad eyesight.
Well, you see?
That has nothing to do with the spores.
So you say.
Yes. But, you know, it's because mushrooms were forbidden and mysterious and largely unknown, they were very attractive to me. And because I have been a very shy person all my life, and I have a stuttering habit, as you can tell, I tend to look at the ground. And so in walking around in Ohio, I found lots of fossils. But when I moved out to Washington State, I didn't find any fossils, but I found lots of mushrooms.
Now, you started out in the woods as a logger. I mean, you spent some time as a logger.
Well,
right?
I went to college and I took several years off. I went into the woods, and you know, as many young men do, they push the envelope of life and death, and I wanted to test my mettle, so I went into the woods and started setting chokers, and I was a logger for 3 years. And some of the best environmentalists I've ever met were loggers, by the way.
Because of the time that they spend in the woods?
Because they're very, very cognizant and knowledgeable about the woods and how to work in the woods without getting killed.
Right.
You know, this is an important thing. In the crew bus, oftentimes, we would stop and pick chanterelles. And they were as bummed out as anyone else would be when their steelhead habitat or their mushroom patch was logged over, because that means they have to go somewhere else. But you know, I was cutting old growth, and we were, you know, doing three log loads. This is like one logging truck that was totally full with three old growth trees. And in between, you know, each turn, I was amazed that we go into these pristine virgin old growth forests in the matter of a day, cut them down, and then they immediately become very arid, enormous amounts of evaporation, sudden drop, raising of temperatures, dropping of humidity, and it astonished me, where's all this carbon coming from? Because the soil in Ohio, where I grew up, is very deep, but here in Washington State, it's really only about a foot or two deep, and that's because of the glacial age, which was only about 10,000 years ago. Soil is being rebuilt by the saprophytic fungi that are knocking down trees, and they become nurse logs. And that carbon cycle increasingly spins. I think now we have the short-term view of the value of the forest, and it's a form of economic myopia to only look at the old growth forest in terms of timber board feet of lumber. I think there's a lot more value in the fungal genome and in its biodiversity that later historians will reflect back, that we did not fully understand or value the nature of the old growth forest because we only looked at it in a very specific monetary fashion.
Tell me something, Paul. Have you ever worked as a teacher, sort of lecturing people about mushrooms and why they're important?
I teach seminars and I write books, and I also stand on the shoulders of many other experts who have been kind and who have also taught me. So this is just not Paul Stamets. There's many other, you know, highly qualified expert mycologists around the world who are all part of the same team.
I asked you, Paul, because I'm going to put you to work here. We have an entire classroom listening to us from the River Crossing Middle School in Portridge, Wisconsin, and Matt's joining us on the phone. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
You're studying mycology, or you're just interested in mushrooms?
Actually, we're studying the environment, and we're restoring wetlands and prairies.
Uh-huh. And do you have a question for Paul?
Actually, I have two.
Go ahead.
Remember when you were talking about the three tarps? Well, one question is that when the insects actually lay their eggs in these piles of dirt, would they retain any of the chemicals and then become poisonous, and then they would be dangerous for the birds to eat, or would they be safe?
Well, that's a great question. I can't fully answer it, but I can answer this. When we analyzed the mushrooms, they were totally free of hydrocarbons, and so the mushrooms were totally edible. In terms of whether the insects absorbed the undecomposed hydrocarbons, great question. I don't know the answer to that.
And I also have another one.
Go ahead, Matt.
Okay.
Since these plants can digest some chemicals, can they digest nuclear waste?
Boy, you have some good questions. There's an article that came out in Nature Science, specifically looking at groups of mushrooms that can concentrate radioactive metals, including cesium. And it's been postulated that this is a potential strategy, but we cannot break down noble elements. Mushrooms concentrate metals. And ostensibly, there is the hypothesis that if we could fruit the mushrooms off of a radioactive site, then you could export then that radioactive material away from that environment. But we cannot break down radioactive waste. We can break down hydrocarbon-based contaminants.
And one of the things that Paul's not telling you, Matt, is that he's done a little bit of work, or has his name and his associates linked to some studies that show mushrooms, fungi, could be used to break down what's left from chemical weapons, VX, nerve gas, that sort of thing, Paul?
Yeah.
Well, that came to me as a great surprise, because I did not know that Battelle was a DOD approved laboratory, and they used some of my strains, and they challenged a surrogate of VX, which is what Saddam Hussein is accused of loading into his warheads, and two of my strains from the old growth forest broke down VX in a heretofore unprecedented fashion, and this is why I think that we should look at the old growth fungal genome as a potential for a national defense. These fungi are national treasures, and the more, this is another example, the more that we study a subject, the more that we realize how little we knew about it. Right now, we only have perhaps 10% of the fungal genome typed to species. 25 to 90% of mushrooms have not yet been characterized, and of the 1 to 2 million species of fungi that are estimated in the world, perhaps 140,000 are mushrooms, but we only know about 14,000 of them to date. So we are just at the beginning of this process, and before we destroy these habitats, it's wise, in my opinion, to preserve as much as possible, because future generations may well be dependent upon it.
Matt, I want to thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
Matt joining us from the River Crossing Middle School in Portridge, Wisconsin. The connection, the classroom of ideas. 1-800-423-8255. Paul, when you're talking about the use of these strains of mushrooms, strains that you found, that's not easy necessarily to isolate the strain of a mushroom to be able to regrow it. I mean, that's one of the hardest things in mycology, isn't it?
Well, it presents some unique problems, and I would say that maybe 5% of the strains that I clone out of nature actually I get to fruit. I'm a specialist in saprophytic fungi. There are also,
is there a layman's way of describing what saprophytic fungi is? Is
that saprophytic fungi are the fungi that utilize wood and plant waste as soon as it's made available. So these are the first entry species in the decomposition cycle. Oyster mushrooms being a classic example, turkey tails being another one. So when I clone these mushrooms, I'm capturing phenotypes. And so I'm actually getting the specific genetic composition of the individual, and I clone them and put them into sterilized petri dishes. In a laboratory setting. We have three laboratories, about 10,000 square feet of clean rooms, and we generate between 50 and 100,000 pounds of mycelium per month. So we actually emanate mycelial tsunamis, is what I call them. These great mycelial waves come out of our laboratories. And I think that once people understand the potential of these mycelial mats, we can go far in helping to restore devastated ecosystems. And, you know, we are engaged with fungi every day. Every one of us is carrying a plethora of fungal spores with us. Every time that you get onto an airplane or mail a letter, you know, there are spores that are hitchhiking along. This is something not to be feared. You know, we are vast biological communities, and it's because we are healthy when our microbial communities have homeostasis, and we become diseased when we have one organism suddenly out of control, and it blossoms and then our immune systems can't handle it. And that's the same as our environment. We are reflections of the environment in which we live. And so if we live in a toxic environment, you know, we also absorb that toxicity. There's an excellent program that PBS put out, which is Bill Moyer's journal. And in that program called Trade Secrets, he had his blood analyzed at Mount Sinai Hospital. He had in his blood 84 contaminants, 83 of which were man-made in the past 60 years. Only lead was the only contaminant that was in his blood that occurred prior to that time. And so he had in his blood, now this is amazing, he had in his blood 13 dioxins, 31 PCBs, half a dozen pesticides. Now, when you ask a doctor, okay, you know, I have a certain dioxin exposure, what's my increase in cancer rate? Well, there's animal studies, you can look that up. But what doctor can tell you, what does it mean to your immune system and to your health when you have, you know, 84 toxins all circulating inside your body? This is heretofore unprecedented. And this is one of the great challenges that we face. This is all recent events. And nature has evolved for, you know, billions and millions of years. But these toxic wastes have really just occurred in the past century. And so we're really challenged with a whole new paradigm that's very, very complex and hard to understand. But fungi, and it's interesting, turkey tails not only break down hydrocarbons, but they also potentiate the immune system. There's an excellent article that was published in The Lancet in 1994 that showed up to a 30% increase in the survival from gastric cancer in combination as an adjuvant therapy with conventional therapies when an extract of this mushroom was given. So we know that these mushrooms potentiate the immune system, and yet at the same time, their enzymes break down toxic waste. I really think they afford a golden opportunity for us to exploit.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Princeton, Massachusetts. Chris is on the line. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Paul, I'm calling to first say thank you for your Microsoft Gold medicinal mushrooms. I've been taking them now for roughly 2 years. Initially, when I started taking them for neuroborreliosis, which is a spirochetal disease in my nervous system that's often found in Lyme disease. But I don't call it Lyme disease because out here in the Northeast, Lyme disease is often found to involve other diseases as well, like babesiosis and ehrlichiosis.
Chris, how do you know it's the mushrooms that are having an effect?
Well, initially I didn't know because I was on antibiotics and I was on a number of other things to counteract the side effects of antibiotics like candida. And I couldn't tell if the mushrooms were helping. I was taking them on good faith. And then I stopped taking the antibiotics after a while when I realized that they weren't going to fully cure me, at least not the antibiotics I had chosen. And then after about a year of being off everything, I started to get ill again and started to take the Microsoft product that Paul has out, these mushroom pills, 2 times a day. And within a week, I started to see an improvement in my health that was out of sync with the normal behavior of the disease. And it's been continuing that way for some time. I've actually added echinacea together with the mushrooms.
It is true, Paul, that the use of mushrooms as a medicine goes back many hundreds or thousands of years in Asian countries. And yet, when I think back to what you began with at the beginning of the program, when you talked about how our parents always told us not to touch mushrooms, to stay away from them, there is a reserve, a reluctance to look at them as perhaps other cultures do.
Well, there is a long history of use of mushrooms as medicinal foods in Asia. The reputations have largely been folkloric until researchers at the Japanese Cancer Institute in Tokyo came out with several studies. And the good news is that many Western scientific studies are now authenticating what the Eastern studies first postulated. One of the most seminal studies that came out was by Ikikawa in 1989, and is studying 174,000 individuals. He was an epidemiologist, and he was looking for dearths or wells in the cancer rates in Japan. And he found in this one prefecture that there was a very substantially lowering of the ambient cancer rates. And so when he published this article in a journal called Cancer Research, this really woke up Western scientists. Now, the cancer rates for this particular type of cancer dropped from 174,000 individuals, dropped from 160 per 100,000 to 58. That led to his discovery that it is because the enoki mushroom cultivation in that prefecture, where they're growing this enoki mushroom called Flammulina velotypes, that led to the discovery of proflammin, which is a protein-bound polysaccharide that helps the immune system. Now, rather than going for these like super cancer drugs or super vaccines, the way that these mushrooms appear to operate is they bolster the immune system with precursor nutrients. And although we don't fully understand how they work, we do know through these studies that they do work. Now, those of us from a European ancestry, the famous Iceman had with him three polypore mushrooms, two birch polypores, Fomes fomentarius and Piptoporus betulinus. Fomes fomentarius is an astonishing species. It's the most common woodconk on birch trees, and this mushroom allowed for the transportability of fire. Now, in those of us growing up in those of us whose ancestors were growing up in colder climates, if you could not have fire during the wintertime, you would die. So the firekeeper of the clan was a very, very important person. If you dig out this woodconk and pack embers of
I have to stop you there. We're taking a short break, Paul. When we come back, more on mycology with my guest, Paul Stamets, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.